So the individual says to himself, as he frequently does, I am very grateful for my success. I have been promoted. I am now the general manager of the Southwest branch. This is something I have always wanted to be. So he has now fulfilled. To him, this is good. This is reward. But now what happens? Having achieved this position, what he calls good is now a new challenge upon his own integrity. In order to justify and sustain this advancement, he must have capacities, he must have abilities. Furthermore, if he has received advancement in economics, if he has a larger salary, he will now be tempted to extravagances. He will find new ways of hurting himself with this good that has apparently happened to him. He will find his family more extravagant, his friends more demanding, his responsibilities greater, and his desire to fill them less. Because now he has so many personal things which his new position will permit him to afford that he begrudges the time that he must spend on the job. Little by little, this benefit turns into a punishment. And perhaps in the midst of his success, he drops dead at 47. Therefore, what was the truth of the matter? Was his promotion good? It was not good if he was not big enough to handle it. And because he was not able to handle it, and because he did not discipline himself, this good turned into negative karma. He caused his own ultimate self-destruction by the misuse of authority which had been vested in him by advancement. He couldn't handle it. If he therefore has something handed to him which he cannot properly administer, it is not good, even though he thinks it is. So all these problems turn upon a very deep and involved series of factors. One thing that nature is demanding of us all the time is that the individual shall achieve victory over the situations in which he finds himself. Victory for man, because he is an intellectually integrated creature, always must involve self-discipline. Self-discipline is the one thing which bestows the courage of right decision. It causes the person to have the strength to obey the best part of his own nature. Without self-discipline, there is bound to be compromise. Wherever compromise comes in, karma comes in. Wherever self-discipline is great enough to preserve the integrity of the individual, his advancements are beneficial and produce good. Unfortunately, however, the more good he enjoys, the greater securities or privileges society bestows, the less self-discipline he has. The ancient historians, looking back over the history of the race, therefore have decided that periods of prosperity were the greatest evils that ever befell mankind, and periods of adversity were the most beneficial. This is exactly the opposite the way we want it to be. But unfortunately, nobody asked us how we wanted it to be. We wanted, as most creatures have always wanted, to follow the natural law of inertia. If the consciousness in man departs entirely, he falls flat on his face. He is unconscious. He is dead. At least he is in a horizontal position. And as far as endeavor is concerned, we have always wanted to be in a horizontal position. We have regarded work as a penalty and leisure as a reward. We have regarded anything that challenged us and made us grow to be an adversity. Everything that left us alone, like the dragon in Siegfried, and let us sleep, was regarded as a great benefit. The whole matter was completely reversed because man decided what he wanted. Man's idea of the perfect universe is the one in which he does nothing and has everything. This is his plan. But for some reason, it doesn't jibe with the eternal program. So the individual locks himself in a desperate effort to convince God that deity is wrong and man is right. He prays, he makes offerings, he creates talisman and magic charms, anything to find some power, celestial or infernal, that will enable him to do as he pleases and be happy. He's never made it work yet. And many have tried. We would hear more reports, except those who have tried have also, most of them, departed from us and are no longer very articulate. But always, the human being has his own ideas of what he wants, but they are not the ideas of the plan that fashioned him. This plan wants certain things done, and it has a simple process of obediences and disobediences, the obediences rewarded and the disobediences punished. From this, there is absolutely no escape. There are no justifications, there are no exonerations. As the individual sows, so shall he reap. It is this little matter of reaping the things we do not want to reap that we call evil. It is also the matter of reaping those things that are right, that are worthy of good harvest, that we call good. And the nature of us being a strange mixture of good and evil, our lives are in many a strange mixture of fortune and misfortune. One day we enjoy a little well-earned good. The next day we spoil it and begin to suffer from an equally well-earned evil. But we just do not like to accept it that way. We do not want to face this problem, that evil is really nothing more than our own disobedience coming home to roost. Evil is corruption caused by creatures capable of mental decision. Now, it's obvious that all these intricate patterns of things cannot work out within any given period of years. So in the Eastern philosophies, both Hindu and Buddhist, and also among the Platonists and Pythagoreans among the Greeks, the doctrine of reincarnation had to be introduced. It was through the concept of metempsychosis that the long-range pattern of things could work out. It was by this pattern also that the apparent inconsistencies of life, the unmerited successes and failures, incidents and accidents that did not appear to be consistent with present known conditions. It was by this law that these were interpreted. Obviously, the individual evolving down through time was not beginning now any more than the great universe of which he is a part is beginning now. The world does not begin when man is born, nor does it end when he dies. Nor is there any reason to assume that man begins or ends, merely with the appearance or disappearance of his physical body. If he is part of an eternal process, then he is also eternal. But in the process of his own growth and development, he has built a very intricate complex of factors. He has become a karmic syndrome in himself. And this syndrome consists of a strange, involved pattern of right and wrong, of good and evil, of creation and destruction, of intelligence and ignorance, of appetite, desire, passion, lust, whatever we wish to consider to be the total background of the total person. He has evolved from periods prehistoric. He has been part of all the empires that rose and fell in the dawn of time. He has shared in every iniquity since the beginning of history. But he has also been present in those wonderful moments of great human aspiration. He may have failed completely in integrity in one life and achieved a great victory in another. Pushed on by the pressure of his own unfinished business, he arrives at his present state, a curious combination of assets and liabilities. He comes into this world perhaps having earned a secure childhood, but at the same time, he has not earned a secure mature life. He has earned the right to have a good mother, but he has not earned the right to have a good wife. He has earned the right to have a good wife, but he has not earned the right to have good children. Each of these patterns has to work out. And in the Jataka tales, which are a Buddhist fable of the previous embodiments of the great teacher, it's pointed out that our lives are combinations of finished and unfinished business. Most of the business being, however, not completely finished. Our morality at a given time may be sufficient to meet the challenge of the moral problem of that time, but 10,000 years from now it will not be adequate. The individual may have gained the right to a good education, but never had the integrity to hold a job. He may have had the natural simplicity of a very good peasant, and be born in this world with an extraordinary measure of potential for happiness and very little potential for success. These patterns are part of destiny. They are earned by the individual. Not one of them is the result of deity pointing a finger. Not one of them is the result of the devil under the pew coaxing the person to become a delinquent. He doesn't need coaxing. He's doing a good job of it all by himself. Why do we have to be led into temptation when most of us already know the way? The individual has this combination of factors. If he was all good or all bad, it would be easy enough to understand him. If he was all good, we would say he was a saint descended from heaven and hope he will go back and not bother us. If he was all evil, we would know that he was a devil raised from the pit, and we would be in a haste to put him back there. But no one is like that. Some have tremendous predominance of evil and curse the generations in which they live. Others have great predominance of good and bless the centuries that remember their names. But the majority of persons are a kind of bit of this and a bit of that. And nearly always, what they are is not quite enough to secure them against the problem of their time. Actually, re-embodiment always also means a shift of scenery. The individual moves into another psychic pattern. While he has been out of embodiment, generations of embodied beings have made certain social changes in material life. The individual who went out of embodiment at the time of the American Revolution and comes back at this time, comes back into a very different world. Therefore, he may have been adequate to that world in which he previously lived, but he is born here with immediate need for further adjustments. He may, however, have the essential integrity to make these adjustments, at least in part. Or he may not have sufficient stamina to make them. If he is not able to constructively adjust, then he will pass through certain painful circumstances. These painful circumstances will either assist him to adjust or will so-called break him. If he is not strong enough to meet the circumstances of the day, he may become an alcoholic, and then this present cycle in delirium tremens. He may become a narcotics addict. Anything can happen to him if he is too weak to face the challenge of his time. But nature, because of its different perspective to this whole situation, seems cruel to us because it does not permit all these weak people to be happy, safe, secure, prosperous, and go on to eternal glory. But if we think for a moment, we realize that nature could not do this and still be just and be worthy of the admiration of any thoughtful person. Nature cannot be weak. Nature cannot be sentimental. Nature must differentiate between love and sentiment, just as every parent has to make this differentiation. The spoiled child is no credit to the parent and will turn upon the parent. Discipline is essential. Now, if, as many people believe, particularly materialists, the failure here goes down to the earth never to rise again, then to the materialist this seems to be very cruel. But to make it cruel, the materialist has to be inconsistent with himself. Because if this man does go down to absolute oblivion, neither he nor anybody else will ever know whether he succeeded or failed. Therefore, he will not be lingering on in the memory of his own failure. But the materialist cannot be right in this. Because if he is right, then the plan is wrong. And it is better to change the viewpoint of man and preserve integrity. So we have to assume that in the great pattern of things, the individual who comes into this world to learn has learning as his objective, whether he knows it or not. If he can learn with a certain amount of joy, if he can accept his lessons with grace and dignity of spirit, this is good. This is the way it ought to be. But lots of people won't let it be this way. If, however, this person is born a rebel, rebels to the end, dies in bitterness, or completely overwhelmed by life, tries to revenge himself upon life by disintegrating his own nature, which is a common psychological problem, then what he has done is to create a tremendous karmic pressure. This individual is continually building a situation against which he must ultimately rebel. The fact that he passes out of this life as unrepentant is of no interest to nature. It doesn't care whether he repents or does not repent. The only thing that nature is concerned with is that this being shall come to its own spiritual maturity. This is the only problem. And in this system of thinking, no one can fail. Some can delay it a little longer than others. Some can play truant longer than others. But in this process, even though the individual actually rebels, rejects the lesson, lives as badly as he can, and becomes a criminal and degenerate for 100 lives, ultimately, nature is going to force him into line. The gradual mounting pressure of his own bad karma will ultimately force him to change his ways. It will be unendurable to him. And one day he must open his eyes and say, "Why has this happened to me?" And when he does this, he begins to grow. Now, the situation is usually not as desperate as this, however, because even where there is a heavy load of rejection of existence, there are also areas of acceptances. The individual whom we term bad is seldom all bad. He has his virtues and his vices, and he also has the vices of his virtues and the virtues of his vices. He is a complex being. Therefore, in his karmic pattern, there are things with which he can face the next life with hope. But there will be a very, very heavy burden. One of the heaviest burdens that the individual has to bring back with him into life is the burden of a bad disposition, based usually upon a psychosis that he is the victim of unfairness. The longer the person, therefore, rejects the law, life after life, the more he is going to come back feeling himself the victim of evil. Because he has refused to see the facts, because he has closed his mind to his own responsibilities and has rejected the karma which is his natural destiny, he comes back into life embittered, suffering from various delusions about himself. He becomes miserable by lack of simple courtesies, kindnesses, and gentlenesses. He finds it so easy to dislike and so difficult to forgive. This is simply due to the fact that he has never accepted the law. When a person comes back so drenched in this peculiar situation, he can also be a tremendous harm, apparently, to other people. And this is where the point of evil takes on the one angle which most people have been unable to cope with. Namely, why a person who is not responsible for another individual's difficulties should be burdened by them. A family with one extremely difficult person, the whole family brought to tragedy by that person. This is again, however, a karmic situation. This family is not what it appears to be, a group of martyrs. This group of martyrs is actually a group of entities, each one of which is carrying its own karmic syndrome. If the individuals themselves have transcended this situation, they either are not in it or find from it a cause of further personal growth. They are not afflicted in vain, even where a difficulty seems to be beyond their control. Nature confronts a complex pattern of this kind with a whole group of karmic possibilities. The members of the family who are unhappy, are these unhappy people themselves well integrated? Is this unhappiness taking place in the lives of clear thinking, better understanding, wisely equipped members of a family? Not usually. It is usually occurring in a family that does not even know what it's all about, that can only suffer, that can only wonder, and if it's pious, do a little praying for release. But this is not the actual answer to the situation at all. The members of the family were perhaps drawn into this pattern by a common karmic problem. But each one of them, in the course of association, has helped to make it worse. Each one of them has failed in the various attitudes and reactions which might have solved something. One has taken a negative patient attitude, which demanded no courage, no discrimination, but simply permitted continuous suffering to itself. Another individual humored too long until they lost control. Another member of the family would have stepped out long ago, but they wanted the estate of this unpleasant person and were going to hang on till the bitter end. One after another, these persons caused this situation to become an instrument for the working out of their own karma. To some, it meant patience to an impatient person. To others, it meant strength to a person not strong enough to have that strength, and therefore required to develop it if possible. To some it meant honesty, not to cling to a dishonest situation even though it was comfortable. It meant that each of these persons was also involved in a karmic pattern. And if in that karma anywhere there was one person who understood through the situation, whose inner consciousness was great enough in that particular situation to understand it, that person was not injured. That person had the insight to know or see or sense the reality. And as Socrates said, the only man who can insult me is a good man. And good men don't insult anyone. So that there was a certain protection in this problem. Wisdom would help us to carry. Insight makes it possible for us to meet responsibilities and bear them if necessary, with continual enrichment to understanding by right attitude within ourselves. So this little complex of situations really breaks down to ways of getting at various angles in the karma of 10, 12, 20 people, each one reacting according to his strength or his weakness. If he reacted according to his strength, he began to solve the matter. If he reacted according to his weakness, he was submerged and lost in it. But each of these patterns was fulfilling itself. The pattern could not have touched them had they not needed the lesson. It could not have operated in their lives had they not deserved it. So that each individual is in a wonderful way guarded by his own deserts. Now we might want to wonder, perhaps, how it is that a mysterious universal power can set someone down in the midst of a particular family and very carefully measure all this karmic circumstance to make sure that nobody is cheated of anything. This seems worse than the old story of the archangel keeping the books of judgment. It sounds like a very heavy task. But there's no task at all, because it doesn't make any difference where any of these people are sat down. It doesn't make any difference at all. Wherever they are placed, their reaction upon the karmic needs of those around them will reveal where the lessons lie. There's no way of escaping it. It may be that this individual is placed in a group of people, all of whom are so self-centered that the unpleasant person can't hurt any of them. But this unpleasant person, by relationship, can inconvenience them in some other way, perhaps financially, so that some weakness in them will be hurt. Whatever is the area in which their own karma requires this experience, they will accept the experience, or at least go through it. They can't avoid it, because the energies, the patterns, the symbols within themselves will come out, challenged by the environmental condition. And it's as though you were sorting things in some kind of a mechanical sorting device. That which you need stands out, it hits you. That which has no part of your need goes past. You never know it happened. But always, in every one of these combinations, some chord of karma is struck. And it is always the chord of what you need. There can never be injustice. And anybody can be put down anywhere and create a situation which will help somebody else to grow. Now, it may be an unpleasant way of helping, but the growth is inevitable. And that is nature's essential end. Therefore, what we commonly call good and bad merely refers, in the deepest essence of the matter, to strength and weakness in ourselves. Attainment in ourselves is of itself good. And the productions of that attainment in life will be benevolent. By these attainments, we achieve value. We come to be known and appreciated by persons of attainment. Our own attainments give us the grace and the dignity and the courage and the quietude to handle our lives in an orderly, gentle manner. We are not going to cause trouble for ourselves. Having attained a certain level, We are not going to poison our own natures with our hates and our difficulties and our antagonisms. We are not going to do any of these things. Therefore, our achievements, our attainments, are going to make life good for us. But as we cannot have attained in everything, as even Buddha himself had to pay his last karmic debt on his last day on earth, so it is not assumed that any life can be so completely perfect in karma that no adversity will arise, no problem will present itself, no new application will be needed. But the person whose karmic good is strong in him will have greater facilities out of his own integrities to meet the circumstances that arise. He will accept his duties as opportunities. He will bear them with insight and patience. And even though he may go through temporary periods of inadequacy, he will triumph in the end. If, however, this person comes in with a very heavy negative load, in which the achievements have not been great, and his cash destiny is so impending that he can no longer evade some of the karmic debts that have been pressing perhaps upon him for generations and ages, this individual finds himself in serious difficulties. To him, his own nature makes the world in which he lives react upon him in the term of negative karma. But this evil which he attributes to others is really the inadequacy in himself, his inability to achieve reasonable self-discipline. Therefore, he becomes a victim. Because he wishes to make an unreasonable profit, he invests his money in an unreasonable enterprise and loses it. He calls the other man a thief, but the real fact was he hoped to be the thief first. In his own selfishness, blinded him and made him the victim of his own cupidity. And in every way, these reactions come. We blame the other person. He is bad. And somewhere behind all this badness is the father of badness, the devil. But this real father of all unhappiness and all misery is simply the spiritual ignorance in ourselves. It is the fact that we are unable to meet the circumstance with enough skill. Now, one way, of course, that the mystics have always approached this is that if man is not sure, if he cannot be completely wise, if he is not truly strong enough to meet all the challenge, then he has to fall back upon the elements of the simple virtues, such as faith and hope. He is to follow the admonitions of the great teachers, to do good to them that outrageously use him, to turn the other cheek, to forgive his enemy quickly. All these do not seem to mean much. In fact, they seem entirely contrary to our purposes. But when we do succeed in returning good for evil, we have performed an act of good in ourselves. We may be the victim of this other person's conspiracy, but if we contributed nothing negative to the event, but held the best principles that we know or believe, and when we cannot be assured of exactly what to do, we do that which is gracious, kind, gentle, honorable, helpful. We are then building into ourselves a better karmic pattern. If we build in forgiveness, we shall be forgiven. Because not actually because of the fact of forgiveness, but because the whole of forgiveness is also a mental attitude. But sometime when we need that attitude ourselves, it will be forthcoming if we have ourselves used that attitude. So everything that we do that is toward graciousness, toward good as we know good, this strengthens the good karmic pattern and makes available new units of helpfulness when we need them. Thus, the syndrome itself is forever changing. And in all these changes, all new good and all new error fit into the pattern to produce the next sequence of events. But the main thing for us to always bear in mind, if we can, is that good is two things. First of all, good is the good in us as character, rightness. And good, in the second place, is the harvest in our environment of the rightness in ourselves. Evil is primarily the ulterior motives of our own minds and emotions. And evil in the world is made up of the reactions of society to the stimulation of the evil in ourselves. Therefore, good and evil really are our own standards of existence reflected back upon us by the society of which we are a part. If we can really understand this, we will no longer allow ourselves to evade personal responsibility on the ground that some imp of darkness is tempting us. The only imp of darkness that was ever necessary is the imp in us, which has been tempting us since before Eden. This imp of darkness is our own self-centeredness, our own selfishness, and our own desperate hope that we can do something wrong without paying for it. And as long as we nurse this joyous thought, we will be paying for things that we do not know we have done. And philosophy helps us to clear this situation, and perhaps this will make the problem of good and evil a little bit easier for us to bear as the mixed karma flows in on us each day. Thank you very much.